Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Welcome to church today. My name is Tracy Howe Koch, and I have served in this church as an RE teacher and many other various little things like that. I've been a member here for about 5 years. Today in the pulpit, we have a very special guest, the Reverend Susan McGinn. And I was fortunate enough to know her as an intern when she was at Elliott Chapel. So it's really nice to have her here today, too. Everyone is invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, which is just through these doors right here. If you are a newcomer this morning, we extend a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of the hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you'll do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the programs and activities going on here at the church, which are quite numerous. If you have children here today, they are invited to stay within the service. If you would like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you're welcome to take home with you. They're all lined up on the other side of this wall. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbor and greet them, especially the ones you've not met yet. All right, everybody, let's go back. Time to take your seats. Time to sit. If you have a short announcement for the good of the church, please step up to the microphone.
Okay, oh, there we go, thank you. All right, my name is Sarah Lazars, and next weekend, next Sunday, is Pride Sunday in St. Louis. If you have not gotten the email from the church, you know, the weekly email, or if you're not on Facebook, we are marching with all of the other UU congregations together in the Pride Parade next Sunday. If you're interested in participating in any way, please come and talk to me. As far as carpooling, that's been a question a lot of people have had. That's kind of up to the individuals. There's no official carpool happening. But if you want to go really early, which is what I'm going, you can come with me because I'm helping out doing stuff at First Church. There's going to be a service beforehand at First Church St. Louis on Waterman. That starts at, I believe, 9 o'clock. And then we'll be making our way from First Church to the parade staging area downtown, however you want to. I'm taking the Metrolink. That's probably how most people are going to go. And if you do have Facebook, please respond to the event invite that has been posted on the church's Facebook page and on UU Friends. That's going to be how we try to communicate with people the day of to tell you where to go in the parade staging area. If you don't have Facebook, but you do have a cell phone, give me your number and I'll text you the information. It will also be announced at the service at First Church that morning, because we'll know by then where we're going to be staged. And if you want to stay after the parade for any of the festivities and Pride, you're of course more than welcome to. But we are marching with all of the other congregations, so 4 UU congregations together. Hopefully we'll have a big contingent there. So any interest, come and see me right after. Thanks.
So today is T-minus 1 week to Camp Fest. Woo-hoo! If you don't know what Camp Fest is and would like to hear the song and dance, come and see me afterwards. It's our official church camp at Per Marquette in the group campgrounds. If you have not yet signed up and are interested, come see me. If you have signed up but haven't yet paid, also come and see me. If you're an organizer or really want to get involved in the organization, our last big organizational meeting is today after church. So.
Yahoo. Hi, I'm Robin. I am co-chair with Kathleen McKeever, the food ministries, and this coming Saturday is our fourth Saturday lunch, and we need stuff, lots of stuff, not just the food things, but also personal care items, so anything you can do. I noticed that you can go to like Deals or the dollar store and get a bunch of dollar soaps and things like that, so we always need soap, shampoo, laundry soap, bleach, things like that, because for those of you that are new here, I know I see a lot of new faces, which is awesome. The personal care items are things that, you know, when their money is tight, it goes to food, and the personal care items become very expensive, and that's the thing that tends to go by the wayside. So when we can provide for them the soup, the soap and things like that, it's really helpful. So if you want to help, please come. We always are looking for people to help us. I know probably Kathleen and I will be here Friday, you know, packing lunches and getting things prepped, but Saturday we need people starting maybe around 10 o'clock to help us with the setup and things like that. So if you have any questions about what we need, I think there's a, Kathleen put a list out there in the where the big huge poster boards are for the old the memory book for Cleaver and Linda. There should be a sheet out there. So sign up, please, whatever you can do. If you can't bring it to church and you can't be here Saturday, I can come get it. It's not a problem. Just make sure we feed our people. That's the most important thing. So thank you.
Thank you. Now, if there are any gratitudes you would like to share, please note we'll have a time for sorrows in a few moments.
I'm Marcia Custer, the chair of the Caring Ministry, and I'd just like to tell you that Mary Weber had surgery on a cyst on the back of one of her knees that was a lot more extensive than had been anticipated. She's in a fair degree of pain and will be maybe disabled for a little bit, but she's at home and she would appreciate hearing from you, calls or cards. Thank you.
I'm new member Casey Luker, and I just would like to say thank you to all you guys again. I just love being a member of this church. There's been multiple things that have happened just within the last couple of weeks that have moved my heart and changed my life, and I'm just so grateful to be here, and I feel like that part of that is because I'm part of this congregation, so thank you very much, and I want to welcome my friends Josh and Anna here, too. I'm glad they came. I'm very grateful for that, too.
Good morning, Catherine Chapman. It's not as fun to say this because he's not in here to embarrass, but 12 years ago today, I became a mother, and it's one of the greatest joys of my life. So if you see my son Cole running around, you can wish him a happy birthday.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Lewis. I wanted to share a concern I have for my childhood friend, grew up on the same street, played kickball together in the street, that kind of thing. Her name is Stephanie. She has cervical cancer. It has spread to her lymph nodes. She's leaving next week to go to the Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Chicago. She'll be there for 5 or 6 weeks with her three boys. She's paying for her own hotel room while staying there, and she has recently put on Facebook things like first train ride, first time in a hotel room, you know, things like that. So she has a GoFundMe page that I have shared on Facebook, and I would like to say the day after I shared it, she got a $1,000 anonymous donation. So if that was one of my friends, I really appreciate it. But if you could just send love for Stephanie, I would really appreciate it.
May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts. A burden shared becomes a load lightened. The prelude begins our worship service as Tori lights the chalice.
Good morning. Our opening words today are from Annie Dillard. We are here to abet to creation and to witness it, to notice each thing so that each thing gets noticed. Together we notice not only each mountain shadow and each stone on the beach, but we notice each other's beautiful face and complex nature so that creation need not play to an empty house. Please join me in singing our opening hymn. It's 188, Come, Come, Whoever You Are. Join us in the responsive reading number 530, Out of the Stars. Out of the stars in their flight, out of the dust of eternity, here we have come, stardust and sunlight mingling through time, through space.
Out of the stars have we come, out from time. Out of the stars have we come.
Time out of time, before time, in the vastness of space, Earth spun to orbit the sun, Earth with the thunder of mountains newborn, the boiling of seas.
Earth formed by sun, lit by sunlight, this is our home. Out of the stars.
Mystery hidden in mystery, back through all time. Mystery rising from rocks in the storm and the sea.
Out of the stars, rising from rocks and the sea, kindled by sunlight on earth, arose life.
Ponder this thing in your heart, ponder with awe. Out of the sea to the land, out of the shallows came ferns.
Out of the sea to the land, up from darkness.
Ponder this thing in your heart, life up from sea, eyes to behold, throats to sing, mates to love.
Life from sea, warmed by sun, washed by rain, life from within, giving birth, grows to love.
This is the wonder of time. This is the marvel of space. Out of the stars swung the earth, life upon earth rose to love.
This is the marvel of life, rising to see and to know. Out of your heart, I wonder, sing and live.
Received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly, we bring to our church and its wide concerns a portion of this bounty. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of this church. This morning's offering will now be given and received. Gratitude, all generous gifts of time, talent, and treasure. And together, we bless them and those who gave in faith, hope, and love. Amen.
So one of my favorite perks of being a minister is that I get to bless things and people, buildings. I get to bless people in all phases of life, newborn babies and people as they're dying, buildings as they're being dedicated, ministers as they're coming into new service or leaving their former service. And one of the things that I love about blessing is that really anyone can do it. Anyone can do it, a blessing. And so I want to tell you a little bit about, you know, the behind-the-scenes things that are happening for me when I bless someone or some being or some animal. So one thing that I do is I imagine that there is kind of a light around that person or that place. And sometimes I'll put a color to that light. So sometimes, I like the color blue. So very often my blessings are blue blessings. But I imagine that person surrounded in light and in color and in peace. And I imagine safety and well-being for that place or that person. And such a blessing happened for me most recently when my children and I where we were living, there was some ducks. We were living near a bay near in San Diego. And the ducks, it was, you know, spring, so there were little ducklings all over the place. It was quite exciting to see these, you know, mama ducks waddling around near the bay with the little ducklings. And so my children and I really took to this one little family of mama and ducklings. And so we decided, while they were sleeping, they were all kind of in a little puppy pile, to go bless them. And so that's what we did. We went over and we imagined them in this protective light, and we talked about what we wish for them, that we wish for them a life of safety and well-being and health. And then we just giggled with delight at how cute they are and how fuzzy and fluffy and how delightful. And so that is how I go about making blessings. And so for all of you that are looking to have a new superpower in your, you know, kit, you now have one. You now leave here armed with the power to bless. A reading that I want to share with you is by Thomas More, and it's from The Reenchantment of Everyday Life. And the reading begins. A culture dedicated to enchantment recognizes our need to live in a world of both facts and holy imagination. It doesn't explain everything away in materialistic terms, but understands that wisdom and deep intelligence require honest appreciation of mystery. It seeks out experiences that quiet our mental ambitions and open a pathway toward some kind of transcendent vision. Experiences that swell the heart and stretch the limits of belief and understanding. Enchantment is both a dulling of the mind and a sharpening of perception. Here ends the reading. Please join me in the spirit of meditation, and I will guide us into this time with a poem I wrote called Faith for Now. As we settle into our seat, all of our life comes down with us, like an extended slinky retracting into a single cylinder. Back you snap into this body and breath, where each day is born and done. Familiar in this cushion, familiar in this ache. Silence comes quick and wraps us up together, claiming all of our wounds as one, fighting back all that could seduce us to stand and walk away. Silence is bigger than the wiggling chairs, calling birds, and unsatisfied child. Within this pulsing hum, our soft face is recognized, held close, held here, held together. Let us keep silence together. Can remain seated while we sing hymn number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song. The first time I really understood the word enchanted. It was about 20 years ago, and I was living with a roommate, a woman who's a roommate of mine at the time, and I'm happy to say is still a very dear friend of mine. And she was in those days, and she is still today a pretty unassuming person. But if you get to know her so well as to accompany her into her private life, you will know her as someone who gently and regularly speaks invitations to the four directions with eloquence and honor pouring from drum and spoken word and song. And all those years ago when we were roommates, I went away on a brief trip to visit family in Georgia. And when I was there, I went to a swamp. A swamp that has ancient cypress trees. I actually don't know if these particular trees were ancient, but don't all cypress trees feel like, yeah, these old beings looking over us? And I found something in that swamp for my friend. And it was just a leaf and a twig that was bound together with moss. And I was really pretty embarrassed to be bringing such a dirty souvenir,
back to my dear friend, but it really reminded me of the things that she had around her room, and so I brought it back anyway. And I remember bringing it to her and placing it. She cupped her hands, and I placed it in her cupped hands, and she looked down at it at a long time, and I was like, I just remember being nervous, and she looked up with this huge smile on her face, saying, "You have been to an enchanted place." And indeed I had. But I don't know that I could tell you today what it was that made this swamp so magical. I mean, it certainly wasn't magical in the sense of performing magic tricks. But it had something to do with revealing this intimate mystery of which we are all a part. There was something about this particular place that embodied that quality somehow. And then many years later, I also understood something about the word enchantment as I was walking with my children, and they are now 11 and 8, and at that time, I think they were like 7 and 4, something like that. And we were walking through our neighborhood. We were probably walking to the neighborhood library. That was usually the destination point as we were walking through those blocks. But we would just get one block away from our house, and the children would slow down. Very slow, and it was like everything around them was coming alive, and they had to notice every single thing. They would find a leaf that needed them, and they would talk to this leaf, and they would sing to this leaf, and they would, boy, would move everything into circles or hexagons. And for my children, these leaves, these things that they were picking up, this sidewalk, this worm, just about everything was enchanted and enchanting. And it took every ounce of my meditation training not to yell, "Could we please get going, please?" This was right about the time in my life when I took up knitting. Knitting saved my parenthood at this time. Every time my sweet children would need to stop and dive through this portal of plant beings, I could keep my mouth shut. I could sit down and I could knit and I could assume the position of a patient mother and hope that someday it might actually be true. And when I was that age, when I was about six or seven, I remember that the portal to my enchanted world was a bush in my front yard. And I remember being under this bush, and I remember singing to the branches. And I remember feeling that the music coming from my voice was actually causing the bush to grow. And then in the next breath, also knowing that the song that was coming from my voice was actually coming from the bush, and that the bush was, we were both growing strong with the music. And sometimes I remember that my father, after work, if I was still under there, he would come over and he would not say anything, but he would just be a part of the magical world that I had created. And now as a parent myself, I realize how, that this really takes something to not just insert yourself into a child's imaginary world, but just kind of wait and see. And so he would just play along, happy to be invited and humbly accepting whatever role he was cast in on that particular day. And all these years later, what all these memories have me wonder is, what does it mean for a place or a person to be enchanted? is enchantment really something that is just for children and their vast spiritual intelligence? Or can adults cultivate enchantment as well? Back in the 19th century, a German sociologist, Max Weber, wrote about the disenchantment of the world. He saw that the world around him was changing. The world of his nostalgia was an agrarian society where people probably lived with a strong sense of community, making their daily living by hand, waking and resting with the sun's rising and setting. He was writing about the disenchantment of the world on the cusp of the industrial age, when machines had just started doing the work that throughout history had always been done by human beings. There was the invention of the light bulb, and perhaps people no longer felt humbled by the power of the sun to give light, because with a flick of the switch, there is light whenever we need it. And along came the invention of the phone and the typewriter and the sewing machine and the phonograph all around these years. And the power of scientific method was regularly used to explain anything that was mysterious. For Max Weber, perhaps, I'm far from a Max Weber scholar, but I'm just imagining that perhaps at this time, for him and for other people, that it may have seemed as if they were watching the world's enchantment fade. But is enchantment really in the world? And can it fade into disenchantment? Perhaps enchantment and disenchantment is in the eye of the beholder. And it is up to each of us to cultivate enchantment in ourselves so that we awaken to the pulsing hum of life that is all around us. Contemporary theologian Matthew Fox is asking similar questions. And he sees how for 98% of human history, we human beings have been creators, right? Creating our own foods, creating our own clothes, our own music, our own art and education. And with the dawn of the industrial age, Fox says that we human beings began to outsource these creative tasks to machines and to other people that could create our daily life for us. And for the first time in human history, we have all but abandoned our creative powers and responsibilities. Our role in society is to be consumers, not creators. Here's Matthew Fox. When we turn our power over to other people, then it feels as if we get a break because someone else does the work for us. We have some freedom, but then we are removed from the creative center, the creative force at the center of life. We may find ourselves vicariously living through others, watching exciting lives unfold on TV while numbing the pain of our own disconnection to life. The hit we get from watching other people on TV pales in comparison to the joy of actually living a creative life. So perhaps there's a connection between the world's fading enchantment as Weber saw it, and our fading creativity as Matthew Fox sees it today. Perhaps when we are creatively engaged in art or just in creatively engaged in creating the daily tasks of our lives, then we are enchanted with the world and enchanted by the world. So in that reading I just read, Fox talks about this removal, that being removed from the creative force at the center of life. being removed from the creative force at the center of life. What is that like? What is that separation like? Well, I think that we humans are fascinated by convenience. And we can easily be lured away from the creative force at the center of life. And I know that this happens for me, when this happens for me, it at first feels like a relief, like Matthew Fox says. It feels like I get a break. But soon there comes this feeling of powerlessness. There comes this feeling of impotence and depression and a seemingly insatiable yearning for something more. And when we are in such a state, it is as the renowned Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel says, what is extraordinary appears to us as habit, the dawn as a daily routine of nature. Thomas Aquinas called this Acadia. He said Acadia was the capital sin of boredom and sloth or ennui at living. We are cut off from the creative force at the center of life, the true oasis, but we don't know it. And so we are trying to replace it by following mirage after mirage, these quick hits of escape and entertainment, and even devolving into substance abuse and other addictions. Rainer Maria Rilke says, if your everyday life seems poor, don't blame it. Blame yourself, because for the Creator, there is no poverty and no poor in different place. This might sound as harsh to you as it does to me, as if Rilke is yelling, it's your fault. And Aquinas is saying, it's the capital sin. But basically, I think that they're both just saying that enchantment is in the eye of the beholder. Look to yourself. That if we don't experience enchantment, it's not the world's problem. It is simply because our attention has been lured away. Our connection to the creative force at the center of life is broken, and the restoration of that connection is up to us. I suspect that this is what people love about traveling, because you get a jolt of enchantment. Because everything is suddenly new. Curiosity is awakened. I spent most of my young adult life living in New York City, and it was so obvious in New York when someone was a tourist. You know, all the locals are down, and, you know, God forbid, and there be any need for any eye contact. It's just down, and while the tourists are just up and away and just marveling at the beauty of the architecture and the height and the lack of sky and all that. But the locals just would hardly ever reach the horizon line. And you know, I mean, the tourists, the how enchanted they were with the buildings and still are, I'm sure, would have been very cute to me, I'm sure, if I weren't so busy to get to God knows where it was so important that I was going. And this also happened, is really dramatic articulation of this, in the movie WALL-E. Did you guys see that years ago? You remember that? So do you remember, or if you didn't, there's a part in the movie where they've all got screens in front of them, and they're all in these hovercrafts, and they never get out of the chair. And so their entire experience of life is through the screen. And so do you remember, there's a character, Mary, who gets, while she gets bumped off of her screen, her screen falls away, and maybe she even gets bumped off of her chair, I can't remember. But anyway, she sees WALL-E, and she has this connection with the robot, albeit, but she has this connection for the first time with a real being. And she wakes up, and she starts looking at life beyond the screen. for the first time. And she looks out the window of the spacecraft, and she is just gleefully, you know, giddy and laughing as she sees shooting stars. And then she sees this man in a hovercraft, John, and she connects with him, and then he takes his screen away. And then they're, you know, the couple scenes later, they're playing in the pool, which they had never seen before, never knew that there was a pool there. So they're splashing and playing and laughing. So Fox reminds us, he mentions in that reading that I shared with you, the creative force at the center of life. So what does that feel like when we're completely connected to that creative force at the center of life? And creativity is not just about making art. To me, creativity is much more about how we do what we do more than what we do. When we are being creative, then we are showing up in life. We are bringing our spirit forward. We are asking questions. We're engaged. We're responding. We're awake. So when does that happen for you? When do you feel yourself a part of that creative force? When you're doing something by hand? When you're gardening, making art, making love, making music, making an elaborate meal, decorating a room, tending well to the people and the places that you love, leading other people and yourself toward creativity and generosity. So my favorite examples of this are those random acts of generosity and senseless acts of beauty. I'm thinking of artists of all kinds who create something anonymously in public spaces. So the flash mobs, the yarn bombing. Does anybody know yarn bombing? No, yeah, a little bit. Yarn bombing it's big in Portland, where people knit things and just put them in public spaces. So bike racks are often a popular place for someone to knit something and just cover it in. Or you'll see pictures of entire trees even covered in hand-knitted things and just anonymously sewn up. It's just absolutely stunning and beautiful and shocking, really, because you know how much effort went into this, just to give it away, not to have a plaque with their name next to it or anything, just for the random acts of beauty. I'm thinking of a family that I heard of who had to cancel a wedding for some reason, and I don't know if they couldn't get a refund or what, but they decided to just totally recreate it and to have the big reception anyway, this huge dinner, and invite just homeless families to the dinner. I think this was in Atlanta or something some months ago, yeah. And I'm thinking of Pope Francis, who I love hearing about, who attempts to abandon the grand papal apartment and to sneak out of the Vatican so that he can be with people who are suffering without. I'm thinking of stories of Jesus seeking out the company of the world's most undesirable, the sick, the tax collectors, the prostitutes, and the children. I'm thinking of a crowd of Unitarian Universalists in yellow shirts standing on the borders in Arizona, facing down the immigration system, singing, "We are standing on the side of love." Those crazy people. And these experiences are at once surprising and exciting because they make us say, "Wow, I can't believe they did that." And our heart is lifted like a child to sit on the shoulders, to be able to see over the crowd of cynics, to get a clear vision of what is truly most holy and exhilarating about our shared humanity. And for some, the work of social justice is serious work, but it can also be about this. It can be about enchantment and creativity. Not just the negative approach of fixing what is broken, but also falling in love with life, awakening to the truth of this time and its uncertain future, feeling the strains of the earth and the strains of our own heart and those of our neighbor. And when we celebrate, we remember how enchanted the world is. We remember how enchanted we are when we create something beautiful. We make music, art, potlucks, dinners, worship. The purpose of all of these things is nothing more or less than to poke holes in reality so that the magic can flow through. To create the world as enchanted as we imagine it could be. And so it is. Then we are hosts and makers of a new world, of beloved community, not just sitting back and waiting for the world to wow us. We are using our own creative powers to meet life on life's terms. And life's favorite game is the game of creativity. So when we play along, we too are creating enchantment. I made an attempt to summarize this sermon in a poem, so here it is. Sometimes creation holds back, like a child seeing a clown for the first time, shy and needing some space to see if you are one of those who will take beauty and turn it into ambition. You make soup from an empty cupboard and a fairy house out of twig and moss, and creation draws near to see how someone else has done the holy work of making things for nothing but joy. Sometimes it feels like creation is busy with the more interesting people, as if you must give it all and away for free, wrapped in surrender and calloused hands, just to get a wink of mercy from the angelic janitor. And other times, it just happens to you. You turn an ordinary corner and wonder, without breath, how could a waterfall collapse out of the sky all the way through the shell of the earth? If you go cold and you open your other eyes, even for an instant, you will see the fall's mist for the illusion, lie, and fraud that it is. And so you look down and away, leaving it behind to riddle whoever comes next. So delicate is the world's enchantment. So delicate is your own. We'll let Mary Oliver have the last word today. What can I say that I have not said before? So I'll say it again. The leaf has a song in it. Stone is the face of patience. Inside the river there is an unfinishable story, and you are somewhere in it, and it will never end until it all ends. So take your busy heart to the art museum and the Chamber of Commerce, but take it also to the forest. The song you heard singing in the leaf when you were a child is singing still. I am of years lived so far, 74, and the leaf is singing still. Let's join our voices together and rise as you are able. And let us sing hymn number 1018. It'll be in the teal hymnal, actually, just to keep you on your toes. And it is Come and Go With Me.
Come and go with me to that land where I'm bound.
Benediction. Y'all can really sing that song. That's good. All right. These are by me as well. O life, this is the day that you have given us. Dawn is spread out like an engraved invitation to join you in the sweet, stable family business of creating creation. Your luring light will come and deliver us from these few earthly hours into the twilight of one, always, forever, yes. But no, not yet. Today, on this day, we are floating as high as noon, like birds playing with the surprise of wind. This is the day that you have given us. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Amen. Go in peace.